Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at KingdomStrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an approved Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on The Dad Show, I will be talking with Scott Henney and Jason Mitz about their adults-only Walt Disney World vacation for the Food and Wine Festival. Welcome back to the podcast, guys.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So this should be really interesting trip report because you're going to be telling us about a vacation that you took that was adults only. You know, just you and your wives heading down to Walt Disney World to experience the Food and Wine Festival. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how this trip came about? What, you know, how you decided to do a trip with just the adults, and maybe the beginnings of how the trip came together.
Well, I'll start here, Jason. Fill in if you need to. We have traveled down there with our wives in the past for adult only trips, and it worked out really well. We were actually down there last November. With a big family trip, all our kids and the in-laws and everybody else. And we had kind of caught the end of Food and Wine Festival when we were there in November. And we kind of got to talking. When we plan our Walt Disney World vacations, we do it around the nice little fire pit at Jason and his wife's house. So we started hashing back our trip in November around the fire, and we got to talking about the Food and Wine Festival and how, you know, everybody kind of enjoyed it, and this led to that, and before you know it, we were planning another trip for 2013 Food and Wine Festival.
Okay, so Jason, the idea this time was to, you know, take the sort of accidental discovery of Food and Wine Festival last year and really this time kind of plan the trip around Food and Wine Festival.
Yeah, we decided that it was something that we really liked last fall, but we didn't think that we got the full enjoyment out of it because we had so many people and so many other things were going on. So we just decided, let's go back and hit it again.
Okay, so what maybe were, you know, a few things that you did that were designed specifically to take better advantage of the Food and Wine Festival this trip?
Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I think, you know, we really utilized touring plans and the days that they showed as Epcot being really good days to go. The other thing that we kind of worked around was our alcohol consumption schedule. I think, you know, we focused this trip around food and wine, but I don't think we stayed strict to food and wine. We had a great time and we did so much new stuff on this trip as a whole. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, so this was a full week, and obviously when you've got 7 days, you know, you're not just going to spend 7 days bouncing from booth to booth in Epcot, as tempting as that might be. Jason, why don't you kind of introduce us to your arrival and maybe the first couple of days, what was on the agenda to get the trip started off right?
Okay. You know, like Scott said, we sit around the fire pit back here quite a bit and we discuss Disney World trips and what we like to do. And this trip, we decided to do things that were new or new to us. And that included taking off from a different airport. We flew into Sanford rather than Orlando International. We used a town car service and utilized the grocery stop, which we'd never done before. And the first night when we got there, we stayed at Pop Century this time. And we went monorail hopping, basically, or the I don't know how to phrase it. Scott, you can help me out here, but
the monorail bar hop.
Yeah, the monorail bar hop. There we are. And we wanted to end up the first night at Polynesian on the beach to watch Hollowish's fireworks.
Okay, and that was something you hadn't done before, or?
Yeah, I had never done that before. In fact, the whole water parade that they had and those types of things, I'd never set foot in the Polynesian before.
Oh, wow.
This trip.
Okay, so what did you think of it?
It's pretty freaking awesome. you know, aside from the Dole Whip machine that they have, but they would not sell, the beach was beautiful and, you know, the perfect amount of sand and this type of thing. The water parade that they had there, the aqua parade, was really cool. And you know, we'd been excited to go for quite a while. So, you know, the Contemporary, we stopped and had the organic beer flight there. And then we got to the Polynesian and we sat in the lawn chairs and watched Hollowish's. And, you know, they piped the music from the parks through the speakers. And it was really awesome.
Yeah. That is a great experience. It's one of my favorite places to watch the fireworks if I'm not going to be in the park itself. Probably is my favorite from outside the parks. So, you know, that was your first night. You got yourself started off right with a little bar hop around the monorail and fireworks there on the beach. Got a chance to check out the electric water pageant for the first time. And what were your first couple of days park plans like? Scott, you want to pick up there where Jason left off?
Well, we were trying, when we planned this trip, trying to do it as more of a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants trip, because generally we've always planned everything to a T. And we were included in the My Magic Plus testing at Pop Century. So we got the Magic Bands, we got Fast Pass Pluses, and that sort of thing, which kind of changed the way that we had originally hoped to plan this.
Before you go too far ahead, what specifically did you do differently because you were going to be using the FastPass Plus system? Because I think that'll be helpful to give us some context.
Well, like I said, originally, you know, we were hoping for this to be a fly by the seat of our pants, use the traditional FastPasses. We've been there multiple times. We know, you know, how to work that FastPass, the original FastPass system, to get the most out of each park while we're there. And when I found out that we were going to be part of the FastPass Plus or the My Magic Plus testing, it kind of threw a curveball at us, forcing us to take advantage of that and kind of structure our trip around more of the rides.
Okay, so the fact that you were going to need to schedule attractions out ahead of time was, you know, kind of forcing you back to the way that you used to, you know, that you normally plan trips, and you wanted to do this one differently. You wanted to do this one as a more spontaneous trip.
Right. You know, it tried to force us into it, but I still think we made the best out of what we had with our scheduling and that kind of thing.
Okay. I know I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this because we're going to devote a whole show with the panel before too long, but I understand that you had some challenges with the FastPass Plus testing while you were on this trip. Why don't you go ahead and let us know kind of what hurdles you faced and, you know, caution everybody, this was during a test phase. Hopefully these are the kinds of problems that the testing is supposed to, you know, root out and fix, but Scott, why don't you kind of give us an idea of what it was that you ran into trouble with?
Yeah. Just a kind of a quick overview. I know you had mentioned after I had already done it to me that we can't link our Halloween party tickets to our My Disney Experience accounts because it causes issues. I think that's where the whole issue started. was I linked our party tickets to our My Disney Experience to our Magic Bands. And upon check-in, we had to have all four of our Magic Bands completely reprogrammed without the party tickets in them, which tied up a little bit of time, got us late on our monorail hop. And then when it came to the Fast Pass Plus stuff, you know, getting into the park, charging on our accounts and that kind of stuff didn't affect anything. But when I tried to use my Fast Pass Pluses, it showed up as they were not available. Now, mind you, when I made all these Fast Pass Plus reservations, I did it for all four of us at the same time. So it kind of struck me as odd when it first came up. And I would say I spent probably better than 2 to 3 hours through the course of the week with cast members and concierge and guest services trying to get this Fast Pass Plus deal sorted out, because every time I went to a reservation, I got almost turned away because it showed up as I didn't have a reservation for it.
Ouch.
But, you know, this, like you said, this is a testing phase. They were pushing me through because I had, I was with a group and they were all okay.
Right.
And I actually even had a couple of cast members ask to see my app on my phone to prove that I had the reservation for that time. So they were fairly accommodating for us, as far as the issues that I was having, but it took up enough time during the trip to kind of be a downfall.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that. And that kind of problem is exactly the kinds of things that I think that we're seeing on and off. The good news, I will say, is that apparently the issues with the hard ticket event tickets, I'm hearing better things, that they may have gotten
news.
That straightened out. yeah, that I know was a downfall, because it, you know, we were traveling shortly after you did, and you know, we ran into some of the same problems with the Halloween party and our Magic Bands. But the good news, I guess, was that the other elements worked. And I don't know, Jason, this was new for you too. How did you find the convenience or lack thereof? I mean, what was your own feelings about Magic Bands when it came to those other elements, using it as a room key, using it as a payment system, using it to enter the parks, those kinds of things?
I really liked it. Usually you have your key to the world card, and you put that with your money clip or in a lanyard or something like that. And that was completely unnecessary. It was just like wearing a wristwatch, and it got me. We had zero problems with ours, I really liked it. I'll be honest.
Well, you know, maybe it was just the attraction saying something about Scott.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a rough guy.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
All right, so that was kind of the overview issue with the Magic Bands, but in the parks themselves, where did you start out in the parks?
Well, day one, we planned on starting out Animal Kingdom. It's not one of our most favorite parks, so we figured, you know, it was a low crowd day. We'd get it out of the way right away and then hop over to a different park in the afternoon, and that was quite the understatement, underthought of the trip, I think.
Okay. So still not Animal Kingdom fans, huh?
Well, no, but it was a good start to the trip. It was an excellent first morning. You know, we hit the rope drop at Animal Kingdom, and we were planning on we actually had our Fast Pass Pluses for Hollywood Studios that day. So we were planning on Epcot and then Hollywood Studios and then bounce back to Magic Kingdom for Wishes that night, because it was the Glow with the Show premiere.
Oh, right.
For Wishes. So we hit Animal Kingdom in the morning. We hit it hard. We were done there by, what, 10, 10:30, Jason, I think?
Yeah, I would say that's accurate.
What did you do in that hour and a half or so that you were in Animal Kingdom? You were at Everest, and what else?
Actually, we were so far ahead of the curve on that. We almost made it to the end of the queue line for Everest, and they turned us back. They weren't ready to open, but the front door was open to it, so we followed everybody else. And all of a sudden, there's this cast member like, what in the world are you doing here? You know, so we got turned back and had to go back to the front, and we were like the sixth people in line for Everest when they first opened. And oh, wow. We rode that a couple of times, and then just kind of took advantage of some short wait times for the safari again, which was, you know, good as usual.
Sure.
And then we went over to Dinosaur, and we did that. It's the first time I've been on that in probably, geez, I don't know, 10 or 12 years.
Wow.
And that was Dinosaur was one of my firsts for the day one in the park. Me and my wife have never been on it, so.
So what did you think of Dinosaur? Being your first ride.
I wouldn't go on it again by myself, but if somebody wanted somebody to go with them, I'd jump on it. It's just one of them rides.
You were scared. You were scared out of your pants, crying the whole time.
I've got pictures for this too, Aaron.
I'm looking forward to those pictures.
Oh, they're awesome.
Well, I've told the joke before, you know, of my son's reaction the first time he rode it, because he's a huge Dinosaur fan, and we got him on the attraction, and the first words out of his mouth when we got off of the attraction was to look over at me and say, "Well, it's a good thing we survived." That was his initial reaction. And I, you know, what could I do? I agreed.
What can you do?
All right. So you did a whirlwind morning at Animal Kingdom. Then you bounced next over to, what was the next destination? Hollywood Studios or Epcot next?
Hollywood Studios was next for our Fast Pass Pluses. So what we did was we actually took a bus from Animal Kingdom to the boardwalk, which was where we had hoped we were going to stay when we first started planning the trip and there wasn't availability.
Okay.
So we wanted to get our boardwalk fixed this trip. So we took a bus to boardwalk, and then we stopped by the Big River Brew House for lunch, kind of an early lunch. Had their beer flights and stuff. Excellent dining. And then once we got done eating lunch, we walked over to Hollywood Studios and hit our Fast Pass Pluses over there, which pretty much the big three. We didn't spend a lot of time there because we were planning on having another day back there again.
Right, sure. Okay, well, but see, that's a good example of where I think Fast Pass Plus is been, you know, the biggest positive in the parks, and that is that, you know, you guys just kind of sauntered into Hollywood Studios after lunch, and I presume were able to, you know, jump on into the Fast Pass line for Toy Story Midway Mania without having been there at rope drop for the Mad Rush.
Yeah, we got in line, rode the attraction, and were off within 20 minutes.
and that was with, I believe it was 105 or 110 minute wait time for the standby line.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. So, okay. So there's one of the benefits of FastPass Plus when it works right.
Yes. And I love the concept of what they're doing with My Magic Plus. Don't get me wrong with the issues that I have. It was frustrating, but I love the concept.
All right. So you had a whirlwind morning in Animal Kingdom, then a quick stop in at Hollywood Studios. Did you then make your way across to Epcot?
Then we walked back across over to Epcot.
Oh, wow. You walked the whole way across.
Yep. Ended up, we had beer garden reservations that evening, which is kind of a ritual for us. Our first day there, or our first park day, whatever. We always eat beer garden first night there. It's kind of the welcoming committee for us.
Okay. And then, so you had this dinner at Beer Garden, and did you end up making it back across to Magic Kingdom for the Glow with the Show fireworks?
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. So let's talk about Glow with the Show. It's, you know, just very recently gotten rolled out. They're doing Glow with the Show. Jason, why don't you explain what Glow with the Show is before we get too far into it?
Well, Glow with the Show involves Mickey ears that you find in the parks, except they have colored lights inside the ears of the hat, and through a transceiver or an emitter of some kind, it they change color and patterns and flash along with music or the show that they put on in front of the castle. Well, at least that's the plan.
Okay, well, this is what I was going to get to then. So this was the plan. This is the way it's supposed to work. So you picked up your ears. What do you remember what it cost, what the ears were?
I think they're like 24 something.
Or like 25 plus tax, I think, somewhere in there.
All right. So you pick up your $25 ears. You get yourself a spot to watch the fireworks show at Magic Kingdom.
Oh, yeah. We met Adam Dale, too.
Oh, and you met Adam for it, too. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
you
worked at Diz Dad's meet in there as well.
Yep.
So tell me, what was your reaction to Glow with the Show?
Go ahead, Scott.
At Wishes, it was interesting. There wasn't a lot of people that I think understood it was happening, and there wasn't a lot of ears, and they were sporadic. The groups that I saw standing together kind of looked pretty cool, but I was kind of standing right behind Jason's shoulder. And we both had ears on, and right when everything started and everybody's synced up, his shut off. And they were like that for probably 2/3 of the show. And then there was a cast member that actually walked up behind, and right as she walked up behind us and said, "Oh, there, they started working again," his came on, but they were doing their own thing. They weren't with the show. I don't know. I think for the premiere of it at Wishes, to me, it was kind of a flop.
Jason, do you agree?
You know, I do. And the thing was, when we're walking through the park with our ears, you know, and they're flashing different colors or whatever, you could hear people say, "Oh, look at their ears." Or, "I wonder what that's all about," you know, this type of thing. There were no signs or no – I mean, they had lots of the ears for sale on the Main Street markets and things like that. But there was nothing, you know, saying that if you pick up these ears, they're all going to sync together for this show and it's going to be something special. So people were kind of like scratching their heads, like, what are these people doing with the flashy ears? Or didn't understand what the concept behind it was.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a good example. I mean, the Glow with the Show thing – even if it works right, I think at least from what I've seen of them, they're only going to be a positive thing, you know, a positive addition to the show if there's enough of them that they, you know, create an effect. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of isolated flashing lights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly
and there's,
right.
You know, we saw Fantasmic later in the week, which we'll get to, I'm sure, but it was a 100% different at Fantasmic than what it was at Wishes.
Well, as long as we're on the Glow with the Show ears, let's go ahead and talk about the experience at Fantasmic. You also, the whole idea at Walt Disney World is that the ears work both in the Magic Kingdom at the castle show there and then also at Fantasmic. So what was the experience with Glow with the Show at Fantasmic?
I thought it was amazing at Fantasmic. They were probably, you know, we sat way up in the corner on the left-hand side and had a great view of the whole stadium. And from the way I looked at it, it was probably every 15 to 20 people in either every row or every other row had a pair on average.
Okay.
So it was a nice spread. It lit up the stadium well. And the way that it worked at Fantasmic seemed good to me. It went with the music. It went with the lighting. And there was actually people, a couple of girls sitting behind us I don't know if you heard them, Jason. They were talking about, do you see those ears? That's crazy. They're lighting up together. Hey, pay it, watch this. And it was just funny for me to hear them because we were sitting right in front of them. And if I remember right, we had our ears on that night. And they were talking about everybody else and how they're, you know, it was just interesting. But I thought Fantasmic was 100% better than what Wishes was on their opening night.
Well, now my question, Jason, is, you know, Scott said that they worked a lot better, that it was, you know, there were more people with them and all that. But my question is, did the flashing ears add to or detract from the show that's going on the stage across the river there?
It kind of depends on what's going on stage, because the lighting of the stage, sometimes it's very bright back into the crowd. Sometimes it's very focused towards the crowd, or excuse me, towards there's the stage. When it's towards the stage, you can tell people's ears are lighting up, and that really adds to it, whether it's like the blue color and how it flows like water or this type of thing, it adds like an extra effect. But when the water, or excuse me, when the lights are back towards you, you don't look at that. You know, your eyes, you squint or look away, you know, briefly or whatever. So the effect's kind of wasted.
Yeah, Scott, you said that you thought, you know, there were some other issues too.
Well, I think as far as making or taking away from the show, it depends on where you're at in the stadium too. You know, if you're sitting kind of in the middle where you got people in front of you that you can see them, but you don't know what they are or what they're doing, you know, you're taking away from the show trying to turn around and see who else has them or what the other ones are doing. Where if you're in the back and you can see everybody's going with the music and with the lighting and stuff, I think that made a big difference.
Okay. And Jason, you had a theory for why it worked better at Fantasmic too.
Yeah, the reason I felt that they sold more of the ears there was because they had like a fifth wheel or a mobile trailer that just exclusively sold the ears right outside the seating area for Fantasmic. And, of course, in the shops, they were selling them. But when you walked up the long pathway to get up to the top, almost like where the vending area was, they had stands or kiosks selling the ears, basically telling people, hey, these are all going to be part of the interactive show. Buy these, buy these, buy these. And the people that did, I think, got a better show.
And they had big screen TVs in that truck too, with a video of Disneyland's glow with the show.
Yeah.
So they did a much better job of promoting, you know, mm-hmm. both what the ears would do and where you would use them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that makes sense at Hollywood Studios. Yeah, it would make sense. It was a better experience that way. All right. Well, let's kind of move forward and maybe talk in some more general terms or broader summary. You know, your park plans got started off with four parks in one day. It's a heck of a way to get started. Overall, I don't know, why don't we start with Scott? Scott, what were some of your highlights just of you know, attractions and things that you enjoyed as part of your park touring? And I want to kind of separate out the food and wine stuff because we'll talk about that separately. But just in terms of overall, you know, attractions and things in the parks, what were highlights for you?
Well, I think a big one was our last trip. We had an opportunity to eat, be our guests for dinner, which was amazing. And this trip, we managed to get in there for lunch. And for being a quick service lunch, that is the best quick service lunch I think I've ever eaten on property, with the selection of food that they have being different than, you know, any place else you can get. And then the whole experience of going in and ordering your food and then bringing it to your table based on RF technology, to you getting your own drinks, soft drinks, that kind of thing was just an interesting, different, new concept for me.
Okay. Jason, how about you? What was one of your favorite in-park experiences?
I'll go back to the FastPass Plus because when we were at Hollywood Studios, the Toy Story Midway Mania and Star Tours, and then the Scott and his wife did the Tower of Terror. And like I said, in and out within 20 minutes on each attraction, you know, or roughly that time when there's huge wait times. To me, that was – it was so well worth not having to do the mad dash for the traditional fast passes that I was really impressed with the technology of that system.
Okay. So, Scott, your turn. What's another highlight for you from a week in the parks?
Well, I've always been a big Test Track fan. It was closed last fall when we were down there for the big redesign that they were doing. And I think – the redesign that they did is a big win for me. It's the same track and pretty much the same concept behind the ride, but the way they upgraded it and made it more guest interactive and that kind of thing, it was a nice, fresh front for it, I think, and concept was great. I really like the new Test Track.
All right. And Jason, you got another one for us?
Yeah, we caught a Halloween party. And Scott, you'll have more to add to this too, I'm sure. But we got an opportunity to get our picture taken with the talking Mickey Mouse or the interactive
yes.
Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
That, at first it kind of weirded me out, but then then it really kind of blew my mind because we were in very late after we'd done all the things at the Halloween party and we're kind of on our way out. We decided, hey, one more thing. And there was like a 65-minute wait compared to the hour and 45 minute to see Jack and Sally across the way. And so we jumped in there. And the interactive Mickey, the talking Mickey Mouse thing is really, really cool.
Okay. So what was your favorite thing about the talking Mickey Mouse?
For me, he did a card trick. I mean, it wasn't just, hey, how are you? I like your costume or these very kind of a – I understand they have to be kind of a generic, statements to kind of move things along. But Mickey Mouse went and pulled this giant deck of cards out and did a magic trick for this lady. And at the end, of course, it was kind of a joke or whatever. But just the pure, imagineering behind this was so impressive. I was really I had to applaud that.
Okay. How about you, Scott? What was the most impressive thing to you about the talking Mickey Mouse experience?
Well, being as we left our kids at home and they left their kids at home, my daughter's five. She was distraught to see us go to Disney World without her. We told her that we were going to leave videos and everything else on Facebook so that she could vicariously see Walt Disney World through us. And the fact that we walked in and asked a cast member immediately before we were two people back in line yet, if we could have a video for our daughter to post online for her. Oh yeah. This was at midnight, 12:15-ish when the park closed at midnight.
Right.
The party was over at midnight. We jumped in line for a 45-minute wait at, I believe, 11:30 or 11:45.
Okay.
So we were already after park close. Oh yeah. We'll get a video or whatever. So they weren't rushing us through it. We had some camera malfunctions with taking me and my wife's picture. The handler had some camera malfunctions with my phone trying to make the video, and nobody was stressed out about stuff. And then I think my biggest memory about this, the interactive Mickey, was Monica and Jason were taking selfies of themselves with characters.
Okay.
And Mickey actually gumped it, or we call it gumping it, where he blinks during the picture. So his eyes are closed,
okay.
His mouth is open.
Right, right.
And to see Mickey Mouse in a picture with his eyes closed, I think, is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime picture for us.
And Jason, you had another photo experience with a Disney character as well you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, we we started doing selfies, right, instead of using PhotoPass, because we didn't use PhotoPass or PhotoPass Plus or any of that stuff. So I would hold my camera phone out and take our pictures. And the characters were not used to that. And the PhotoPass people didn't know what to think of that. So we went over into the new Fantasyland area and with Goofy and Donald. And we took selfies with my phone. And they were generally, you know, like excited or thought that was so unique, I guess. But then when we met Ariel in her grotto, we had her take our picture with the PhotoPass lady, and she stayed in character, and the PhotoPass lady just cracked up because she'd never seen that happen before. And I have a friend of mine who lives out in Los Angeles, and he has his picture taken by celebrities. He hands celebrities his pic, you know, his phone or whatever, and says, "Hey, take my picture," and okay, then he posts who takes his picture. So that's where I got the idea.
Right, right.
But yeah, we had a really nice picture of my wife and I and some random PhotoPass lady taken by the Little Mermaid.
I love it. That's hilarious. You're going to have to send me these pictures so we can post them with this episode.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So those were some in-park highlights. Want to go ahead and move over to the Food and Wine Festival, because that was kind of the motivation behind this trip, and talk about some of the highlights of the Food and Wine Festival. So, Scott, what were, you know, a couple of your favorite things about Food and Wine Festival?
Well, most of my favorites are geared around the alcohol side of it. You know, we love Beer Garden. We love the Germany Pavilion and the beer that they have out there. They have some extra stuff that comes out during Food and Wine. Actually, quite a bit of extra stuff. They actually had two beer flights of four beers each that we had tried that were really, really good. And then I had some really good beer from Brazil. And
really? Good beer,
yeah,
from Brazil. I'm impressed and surprised a little.
It surprised me. I stopped by actually to get a lamb chop, which the lamb chop was, it was good, but it wasn't on the top of my list. And I figured, oh, I'll get a beer with it. And it was, I can't even pronounce the first part of it, but it was a black beer. And it came out and it was literally, it was in the cup, a black beer. But it went down like a medium lager. I mean, you didn't have to chew on it. It went down smooth. It went down good. It was just a good beer for what it looked like.
Cool.
So, and then I think those two are probably my big beer picks out of the food and wine. My food picks are probably the crab roll at the American Pavilion. And then I had the escargot out of France, which was amazing.
Okay. Good choices. How about you, Jason? What were your favorite things from Food and Wine Festival?
My favorite beer was the Innocent Gun from Scotland. That was probably the most rich, flavorful beer that they had. And we partook in quite a few of the beers from around the lagoon there. But that one was really good. And also the Scotch Flight from Scotland was really good. One thing that I was a little disappointed in, and Scott and I both experienced this, was at Canada we got in line for their cheddar soup and the filet.
Yeah.
And both of our filets were overcooked and were really tough. Now, that might have just been a one, you know, afternoon, one shift of an employee trying to keep things warm, because we did experience record temperatures while we were down there. It was really hot.
Yeah.
But that was really disappointing. The soup was excellent as always. But and then we moved around. Like Scott said, the escargot was really good. The sushi spicy roll from Japan was very good. There wasn't anything poor to eat there. It was all really good.
Okay.
The Belgian flights were amazing also.
Oh yeah, that Belgian beer flight was actually right on par with that. I think it was the first German flight that had the grapefruit beer in it. Was that the one we had the first day? Yeah, that was really good too.
Yeah, I've heard lots of positive things about that grapefruit beer.
Oh, that's good.
I guess the last thing I want to ask you about before we get to sort of closing thoughts, any other you know, aside from Food and Wine Festival, dining experiences. You've mentioned a couple of things here and there that stood out to you during this, you know, week adults only trip.
I think we only had two dining, like sit-down dining reservations, table service reservations, and that was Beer Garden, and then we had a Kona breakfast reservation one morning. All the you know, the rest of the quick service meals that we had had, and we, when we booked this trip, we got hooked up with the free dining package.
Right.
And we took advantage of the quick service dining, rather than the standard dining. And
that's the one that was free because you were at Pop.
Right. Right. So with that, you know, we were trying to work different quick service meals, you know, and when we go with the kids or previous trips, it's always been the standard, you know, double cheeseburger, chicken strips, or, you know, pizza or whatever for the quick service meals. And we were really wanting this trip to be different stuff. So we, you know, we had stopped by Starring Rolls in Hollywood Studios, which was a really good kind of different, new for me and my wife. Like I had mentioned, our beer guest lunch that day was amazing. A lot of food and wine for lunch. But that Kona breakfast that we sat down to was quite possibly one of the best breakfasts that I've ever had on site.
Okay. And which of the Kona breakfast specialties did you partake in?
If I remember right, Jason and I both had the steak and eggs.
Is that the Big Kahuna?
I don't remember that.
Oh, okay.
Being part of it. I think it was just the standard steak and eggs, okay. Jason. Am I thinking right?
I just saw the steak and eggs part and I jumped on that because everything else was... Everything else, you know, was loaded with sugar, like the Tonga toast that Monica,
it is
my wife had. Yeah. Oh, man. But I got a little taste of that, and holy buckets, is that stuff good.
Yeah, so we had the steak and eggs, and our wives both had the Tonga toast. So it was a well-deserved breakfast.
Okay. So all good stuff there. Jason, how about you? What was your, you know, you tried some new and different counter service stuff. What was your favorite new counter service try of this trip?
You know, we went to the Food and Wine Festival and we tried a lot of new different things. But when we stayed at Pop Century, we ate supper there one night, and through the counter service there, they had shrimp over cheese grits. And at first I was like, I don't know, that doesn't sound all that great. But I tried it anyway. That might have been the best meal I had the whole trip. It had this Middle Eastern sauce over it. I think it's called harissa
or something. Yeah.
Yeah, over it. And holy cats, the shrimp and the cheese grits and the sauce, it was really, really good.
Sounds great. I'm going to have to look for that one. That's, I think, fairly new on the Pop Century menu.
Yeah, it just got added, I think, last spring.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I think we've covered most of the things for your trip. So before we go away, I do want to ask each of you to, you know, think for a minute about anything that kind of jumps out at you as being a big deal or a significant part of your trip or something that, you know, was particularly good or particularly bad either way that you think might be helpful to somebody else who's, you know, planning on doing a similar adults only kind of trip. What bits of advice might you give them that maybe we haven't talked about yet? So I don't know, Jason, why don't you take a first stab at that?
Well, with Food and Wine Festival going on, and I know in the media before we'd left, there was an article about a man who had become overly intoxicated at the park and had an incident. Don't be that guy, you know. And when we were at the Wave at the Contemporary, Scott, you might remember this, that lady that was at the end of the bar of that convention, she was embarrassing herself and embarrassing the people that she was with because she was overly intoxicated. Now, look, Scott and I partook in a lot of different alcohol and we drank, but we never got, you know, blasted. It wasn't like a fraternity party or anything. Yeah, and don't be that person. Don't ruin your trip because you can't handle your alcohol.
Yeah, that's a good point. There are a lot of great things to try. The key is to pace yourself.
Yeah, and the crowds, like on Friday, or excuse me, on Saturday and Sunday at Epcot during the Food and Wine Festival, if at all possible, avoid it because it is packed with people.
Yeah. And Scott, anything else you want to add?
I think the biggest thing that I want to add is the do your research or hire somebody to do it for you factor. If, you know, we were planning on this trip being a fly by the seat of your pants, and with all the My Magic Plus testing that was going on, if we were not part of that, we would have not had near the trip that we had, because of the fact that we were trying to fly by the seat of our pants. You know, the FastPass Pluses, I think once we realized we were doing them, we had really, really good picks and really good times, and that almost made our trip and directed us to where we needed to be to make the trip the best that it was supposed to be. And if you're listening to this and you're going down while My Magic Plus is still in testing, understand that it still is in testing. I don't know how many times during the week I had to tell myself that in the back of my head. It's still in testing.
Yeah.
Just relax. And it's still vacation. They're going to take care of it, you know, and they did. So it's, you know, do your research and understand if you're going down, it's still testing right now. So,
yeah. And the last update I just saw is that you should expect to see testing phase continue through January 5th, at least.
Yep. Yep. I saw that too today.
Yeah.
And something that was kind of weird, we had FastPass Pluses taken care of, but when we got to parks, you know, they were out of FastPasses, regular old school FastPasses, by like 9:15, 9:45 in the morning. So if you are not, you know, ahead of the curve doing your research, you may find your experience is going to be just not quite as good.
Yeah, it's going to be challenging. I mean, that's one of the things that is a big element of the testing right now is figuring out how to balance, you know, how many FastPass Plus to make available, when to release them, and all of those kinds of things. You know, they just didn't have metrics. You know, they're dealing with new kinds of guest psychology that they haven't dealt with before. And, you know, for example, there's no rational explanation for why wait times at attractions across the board have been up 15 to 20% since they rolled out FastPass Plus. There's no logical explanation for that because the capacity of the attractions is identical. So it shouldn't change.
And what we noticed too is when we'd get off the Toy Story Mania or Midway Mania and we're loading onto the attraction and we're leaving, the wait time out front is posted at like 115 minutes or whatever, but there's hardly anybody inside that. So I don't know if it just scares them away and they say, hey, I'm not going to wait 115 minutes for this because there's hardly anybody inside waiting. So I think they're still kind of working out the kinks there too.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, guys, thank you so much for sharing with us about your trip. You know, I'm taking a solo trip for the Diz Dads convention here in January, but I'm thinking that I'm going to have to find a way down the road here to get my wife and I to have an adult getaway together because it sounds like you guys had a blast, and it's a great way to have a little bit different kind of Walt Disney World experience than, you know, you have when you're traveling with kids and family and having to deal with all of those issues.
You know, that's another tidbit that I'll throw in is if you've never been down there adult only, and I've gotten a ton of criticism about going to Walt Disney World without my kids. If you've never been down there as an adult only, take the time and do the trip because it's worth it. It's a completely different experience.
Yeah, you know, I find that criticism always kind of silly. I mean, people wouldn't criticize if you'd gone to Vegas without your kids.
Exactly.
You know, why is it different if the things that you enjoy are at Walt Disney World instead of in casinos in Vegas?
Yep. Yep.
All right. Well, thanks again, guys. I had a great time talking to you about this, and I look forward to probably talking with you again sometime soon.
It's been great. Thanks yep, for thanks having for having us.
Yep, thanks for having me, too.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. Never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment, and there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.